Record. All right. So welcome everybody to Zen Talk.
I want to welcome Nick, Shiloh, Kate, Jennifer, Peggy Bear.
Hi, Peggy.
And Allison. And my guess is we'll probably...
And that's Kathy.
Kathy with a C. Mm-hmm. We have two Kathys with a C.
I think we have three on Team Zen with a C.
So happy Monday. Mm-hmm. Hopefully everybody's Monday is going well. We've recorded this morning's podcast, which is about an amazing book, which I think you'll like.
Yeah, it's a good book. Really good book.
And then yoga, grocery store, and here we are.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get a haircut today because it's getting a little long.
I'm already in a zone where I need to slow down. So that's why I'm not like in a really silly mood right now.
Oh,
I'm not
yeah.
in a bad mood. No, but
right.
Todd's trying to play and yeah. I'm just like, I need to ground. Last night I felt like I needed to ground, and then I got up this morning and I went from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing, and now I'm sitting down again. So,
don't you love going thing to thing to thing to thing?
I don't. I'm not good at it, and I'm like, I'm going to cook chili, and then I'm going to like I'm making all these plans. Anyway, you guys don't care about this. This is not
important. They do care, sweetie.
So today we have enough questions that we're just going to go right into questions. A lot of times I do a little thing at the beginning, but
yeah, we're not going to have an opening.
We have a couple questions, and then I'm assuming because there's a lot of people on the call, maybe, or on this talk, that maybe other people have questions too.
So
just jump in.
So we have some new people here who may not know how this works.
Oh, okay.
So we mute everybody just because the more muted it is, the better it is for everybody's listening experience. But if you have a question, you can raise your hand. In the bottom of if you kind of move your mouse around, there's a bunch of icons at the bottom. One is participants, one is share screen, one is chat. So you can click on chat and there's a raise hand, or you can even go into your box and there's like three dots in the upper right hand. It doesn't say raise hand there. How do you raise hand?
You just do it from the bottom, I think.
Okay.
Or you just will say, do you have a question? And you can raise your hand.
So, and then if you have a question, we'll unmute you. You'll ask your question and then we'll probably mute you again, just because if there's two lines going, it lowers the volume for everybody.
Okay.
I'm just getting everybody up to speed.
All right. I'm not even thinking about what you're saying. I'm in my own head.
You're not thinking about what I'm saying?
Let's just get going.
So before, and I always like to give more attention to our live people as opposed to the written in questions. So I'm going to start with one just to give you guys some warm up time. But if you have a question, just raise your hand on the screen and we'll get to you. How about that?
Sounds good.
So here's the first question, and it's a quick one. Are you able to talk, this is from, I don't know.
Don't do names.
Are you able to talk a little bit about dealing with parents' divorce as an adult? I guess I have some experiences with that. I don't have any resources for you, like no books or anything. My parents should have gotten divorced when they were 7. Instead, they waited till I was 18, and thereby giving me a multitude of life lessons to be learned from between the fresh ages of 7 and 18. I don't know. My parents were not really good at being divorced in the beginning, and it was really hard because I always wanted to make everybody happy, and that didn't really work really well. And then as they kind of matured and softened up, my mom actually softened up and started inviting my dad over for dinners and things like that. The only thing I could say to this person who asked the question is it's not an easy thing to do. And just take care of yourself and know that there's nothing that you could do to make your parents get along, love each other, not love each other. It's really about taking care of yourself.
Yeah, and it's normal, if the question is, okay, I'm an adult and my parents have decided to split up, is it normal to feel sad or grieve? Yeah, absolutely. When a family changes, regardless of your age, regardless of your expectation, or regardless of the fact that maybe you knew they fought all the time, it doesn't really matter. Or maybe the other extreme that you're like, I had no idea this was coming. You grieve it. It's hard and it's sad. And you're not just grieving present time. You're grieving what you thought your family unit was from the time you were little. And there's all sorts of layers to it. So just because you're an adult, people are like, well, you're an adult, you don't really need your parents together at this point. That's not true. And you don't have to fight that battle with people. But if you hear things like that, you get to be as sad as you want to be, and you get to own it. Actually, on the show today, the one that we taped for tomorrow, we talk about that one of the things you have to do if you're going to deal with anything is to let it in. If you've got to be able to surrender to something and recognize what has happened, if you're going to make any change in it. If you just keep pushing it away and saying, I shouldn't be sad about this, or this shouldn't bother me, or it should be different, you can't even deal with it. So there's nothing to do, because you're using all your energy to pretend it's not happening, or to decide that it shouldn't be happening. So you can use that metaphor, or that, you know, it's not a metaphor. You can use that understanding with really anything you're not accepting. But I would also seek out other people, you know, like Todd, who have had the experience of having divorced parents in, you know, when you are an adult, just to kind of have someone to bounce things off of, and sometimes just have a laugh about it. Not because it's innately funny, but because sometimes we need humor to diffuse our sadness and our anger. And that's helpful. So, you know.
Jennifer had some comments.
Oh, okay.
Jennifer, you're on.
Hi. First, let me say I'm starting to recognize people on this Zoom technology, so I think that's really cool. So hi to the new people, but I feel like I'm starting to actually get to know everybody. I'm not on Facebook that much, so okay. So my first comment is on something that Todd and Kathy talk about a lot, in terms of being brave enough and vulnerable enough to put yourself out there to do things. And I just wanted to tell everybody that I talked about an event that I did a couple months ago, and it was really hard, and some negative stuff came from it, and I had a hard time dealing with it. But as a result of that program, I then found someone in my community who attended the program that I did and was motivated to plan a Dance for Kindness, one of Orly Waba's Life Fest Inside kickoff to World Kindness Week. So she and I were co-leaders for Dance for Kindness Morristown, and she has a really good friend, and now the three of us know each other and we're all like-minded, and I feel like I'm starting to build a little tribe of my own in Morristown. So I just wanted to give an example to everybody that even though sometimes we talk about things and we're a little bit skeptical and we're not sure if they're true, this is my real life example of something being vulnerable and putting myself out there and finding people that are just wonderful. And I feel like I belong more in my community now because I'm friends with these women. So I want to say thank you and also just let everybody know that. And then my question is, with the holidays around the corner, for the last few years, I've been trying to like set intentions with myself and my husband and my family about the holidays, and to feel more filled up by the holidays instead of depleted by the holidays. Because I feel like every year I go into it with a positive attitude, like, okay, this is the year I'm going to set the intentions. I'm not going to let it deplete me. And then I wind up just not being able to figure it out. So I was just wondering if anybody had any like real, I'm kind of like Todd in the sense that I need kind of like practical steps. I pretty much just talked about it and written some things down, but not really figured out a way. I feel like I wrote them all down and then I just get sucked back into everything we've done in the past. Like the crazy gift giving with my husband's family, just going places and doing things that I don't really want to do. Just a lot of the have to do's instead of the want to do's. So I didn't know if anybody had any practical advice on kind of how to not just set your intention around the holidays, but also follow through on it.
I love it. So I'm going to mute you. We had a conversation yesterday, and I feel like this is kind of a semi-private community, so I'll share something that I wouldn't share on the podcast. Uh-oh, you're getting nervous. She's getting nervous. We go to my brother's. Okay. And sometimes
don't share my stuff. If you want to share your stuff.
I'm not going to share your stuff. My brother and his wife are lovely, but sometimes it's challenging. That's the nicest way I can say it.
Well, it's really not about them so much as it is the travel and the being in someone else's home and the experience of of having the holidays in somebody else's world.
And they're also challenging. And
this is coming from you.
I know, and it's okay. And we always feel like they're, because we go to their house and they're making the choices for everybody. And we feel like, and because we're staying at their house, we completely lose control. And one small practical thing that we decided to do yesterday for Thanksgiving in 2 weeks or whenever it is we decided that we are going to be in charge of breakfast. Yeah. One day, and we're going to go buy donuts or something like that the second day. Why is that a big deal? It really isn't, other than the fact that it just kind of, one, shifts the energy a little bit because we're always on their clock. This is when we're having breakfast. This is when we are going to go hiking.
We lose our autonomy.
And if we can kind of take ownership a little bit over it, and we're going to do it in the beginning of the day because the middle of the day and the end of the day is always a little bit more chaotic. It will give us a sense of ownership, contribution, a little bit of decision-making power.
Standing on our own. And here's the thing. It's not about changing them.
Right.
We're not going into a situation and saying, we're going to do this so they change. And the they is any other family member, anybody. It is for us, so we show up better for them, regardless of what we do. Mm-hmm. So you never go in with the intention of the holidays to say, I'm going to do something different. They better change too. You go in and you take care of yourself. You figure out ways to take care of yourself. And sometimes that's saying no. And sometimes that's saying, instead of that, I would like to do that. I'm not saying it's always super comfortable because it may shift a dynamic. Mm-hmm. I think all families have a lot of like, you know, this is what we do every year. And this is how we do it every year. And sometimes somebody shifts that dynamic and everybody gets initially uncomfortable. But to add to that, and again, we can go back to the story that Todd's telling, but just so I don't forget this with what Jennifer's saying is, you know, a lot of times with things like the holidays, we have an intention, which is always good. And we maybe even write it down and put it up on the fridge or something. And our intention is, I'm going to do it differently this year. The holidays are going to be different this year. I'm not going to get overwhelmed. And what that ends up being is just a bumper sticker slogan that we look at and our actions aren't changing. We're like, I want that. I want that. And intention is always the first thing. So it's not like that was not helpful. It's just to Jennifer and to myself and everybody here, those choices are everyday small choices. They're not one big choice where we say, I intend to not have a crazy holiday, therefore I won't. It doesn't work that way. It's teeny choices. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, Todd and I were with our good friends, and we always have a holiday party with them. You know, my version of holiday party is having one family over and cooking. That's just to give you an idea.
Or ordering pizza.
Or ordering pizza or having Portillo's. That's my version of a holiday party. And so we made that plan. Well, I got a text last night from one of my best girlfriends. I mean, one of my most important people, and it's her birthday that day. Mm. I forgot. I didn't forget it was her birthday, but I didn't consider it when I was making this holiday party plan. So part of me is like, okay, well, I'm just going to tell her the next night I'll go out with her. And then Friday night I'll go out with these other friends and I'll figure it out because I feel bad. The truth is in the holidays, I can only do one holiday party a weekend. It's just all I can do because there's too many other things going on and I can't do the whole back to back to back. So I said to my girlfriend I am so sorry. I made this plan for Friday night. That day, I would like to take you to lunch, or a few days before that, I would like to take you to lunch. So I'm still going to take ownership of what I want to do with her, but I'm not going to make a plan to appease her or to alleviate my guilt because it's not good for me. And that choice changes the holidays. And it's hard because these are the most important people, right?
And you're disappointing.
And I'm disappointing somebody. And I know that's small and you guys may be like, that's not a big deal, but those are the choices. When someone says, will you volunteer at the, you know, the holiday thing? We don't have anybody. It's only an hour. All you have to do is show up. Okay, I'll do it. Well, you just filled your time. If you're cool with it, cool. Kathy's not so cool with stuff like that. I do volunteer for certain things, but it's got to be such a good fit for me. Because if I start saying yes to a bunch of things, all of a sudden it fills up and it doesn't look like a lot on the calendar, but it feels like a lot. So it's also making decisions with gift giving, really organizing our thoughts of what am I going to do for each person? And I'm only going to do that. And then when that day arrives, you're not like, oh, I should have had more gifts or I should have done it better. You feel really confident about this is what I chose with heart intention. And even if they give me three more things or their idea was better, mine is coming from the right place and it's okay. And so it's little things. It's not the big, I'm going to make the holidays different, because that's just a slogan. That doesn't change it. It may start the energy to change it, but then you have to make a decision that is sometimes uncomfortable.
One thing I'll add is if you have a partner, get on the same page with your partner. You know, this is going to come out horribly, but if it's an us against them attitude, like, oh, we got to go to, you know, Cousin Bobby's, and we know Cousin Bobby's a pain in the butt, get on the same page before you get there. Because if we would have come up with a breakfast plan in the middle of it, I would have been kind of emotionally frazzled a little
bit. Todd would say, why are you bringing this up when we're already here?
Right. So we have the plan. That will help us to go in with the intention. And so figure out what your own plan is. Because, you know, Albert Einstein's quote is, nothing happens until something moves. So for us to go back into a situation thinking that it's going to be a lot different without making any changes. And then secondly, if you're making the decisions to try to change your brother-in-law, sister-in-law, cousin, mom, dad, stepdad, it's not going to work. We can only change ourselves. And you all know that because you listen to the podcast, but we forget so easily. Like, if they could just be a little bit more accommodating to my needs, I would be happy. If they haven't done it yet, unless they have some spiritual aha, it's not going to happen.
Or the dynamics of a family get together. Say that there's something that everybody does and you're like, this doesn't work for me. You can choose to shift it to make it work for you, but don't expect everybody else to give it up for you. Does that make sense? Like, I think sometimes we'll say, if everybody really loved me or if I mattered, everybody else would change everything for me. And that's not always the way things work. It may work that way when you shift a dynamic and say, I'm going to show up, you know, we can only show up for, we were just figuring out something a couple weeks ago with your dad about, like, we can do something for 15 minutes or we can do something for 30 minutes and then we're done. Now the rest of the family may stay there for 2 more hours and that's okay. Like, we need to do our thing and then let everybody else do their thing. I think where we get stuck is where we'll say, I'm going to shift. Why isn't everybody else shifting?
Ain't going to happen.
It doesn't work that way. It might.
It's possible. But to do it, to shift with the intention to make other people shift, there's an energy, it's a setup, they feel it. But if you're doing it from an authentic place and you really don't care whether or not they shift or not, it actually makes it more likely that they will shift.
Now, with that statement, it doesn't mean you can't share what you're doing, and it doesn't mean you can't share why you're doing it. It doesn't mean that you have to be quiet and to not bother anybody and to not rock the boat. You can do both things simultaneously. You can share why you're doing what you're doing, why you're changing the gift giving or the amount of time you spend at someone's house or not showing up for a party. You can say it, but you say it with groundedness of, this is what I'm doing, but I want you guys to do whatever works for you. Mm-hmm. You're not going into it with a, am I important or not? Mm-hmm. You know, that's that whole thing. We get hit in the face with it.
So I want to go back real quick. We just started talking about divorce. I'm going to go over to Kelly real quick because she had something to share regarding divorced parents. Kelly, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi.
I was just going to add that I was 22 when my parents got divorced, and it's now been 20 years, and it shifts over time. I mean, in the beginning, like, my mom and I were literally on our own for the first time in our lives at the exact same time. So that was really interesting to go through that. And thankfully, it worked out well that my parents didn't have to be around each other for quite a long time. But now I have a young child, and that's brought it back up where there is a lot more, a lot more times that we get together, especially around like events for my daughter. And so now it's gotten harder again because we had kind of gotten to an okay point where when we'd have time together, it went pretty well. But now we're having a lot of problems as well, where my brother and I are having to kind of try to keep our parents separate aside from the actual event, because a couple years ago it went really well and we all hung out for the whole weekend, and then my dad lost it afterwards. So I think we have to kind of be in tune with how it is for both of our parents and figure out what works for everybody, and know that that will shift over time. The other thing that seems to shift it is whether or not they each have a spouse. It went fine when they both had spouses, and now that my dad is single again, like, that creates more tension, I think, because he's just sitting here watching his ex with her new partner. So we try to, my brother and I both try to like acknowledge that it's not comfortable for them to be around each other for long periods of time and try to orchestrate that. There's been some times when it's difficult and we just have to get through it. But anyway, it's not easy, but the good thing as well about being an adult is that you can kind of understand sometimes. Like I feel like I can, even though I would have loved my parents to stay together, I can see that they weren't a good fit for each other, and I can logic through that, which I think would be harder for a young child. Awesome. And the only other thing is the holidays is the toughest. You know, it's like you're grieving that you had this like happy family together. Not everybody, but mine was like we got along well. We had great holidays, and now I have to kind of pick and you know where are we going to spend time, and there's a lot of juggling involved.
Yeah, that sucks. Thanks, that's so good. Thanks, Kelly. So we're kind of going back and forth, but these are both important topics. Mm-hmm. One thing before I go to Millie is we're doing this free talk for all of you Zen people on Monday, and it's regarding holiday stuff. So this is just kind of scratching the surface.
Yeah, it's talking about what Kelly just said, and it's also, you know, the changing and shifting, and also the question that Jen had about, you know, how do I not make this, how do I not only set the intention, but then follow through with my intention, but also, you know, with both of these things, just to kind of, I always like to thread these things together, is that you gotta have some self-forgiveness about it. Like a lot of times I'll be like, oh, I said I was gonna do it this way and it didn't turn out this way. And the way that we organized it in our mind may not even exist in the real world. Maybe it wasn't supposed to go that way. Or, you know, the question of, you know, the holidays are supposed to be smooth and this is so bumpy. Maybe the holidays are supposed to be bumpy. Maybe not bumpy like we don't look forward to them, but who told us that the holidays were like the most peaceful time? Well, actually, that's the dumbest thing I've ever said. Everybody tells us the holidays are supposed to be there.
Jesus said.
Yeah, really, I know. Everybody tells us, oh, isn't this the best time of year? Honestly, I believe it is. Because I think not the day of Christmas. Todd and I are not invested in the actual day. It's the spirit.
Yeah, the intention is peace on earth.
Yeah, and I
love
that.
The reality is my family drives me nuts.
Right, but can you find right now, starting now, I mean, the Christmas music has already begun on, you know,
yeah,
all the radio stations. So now that it has, do you notice there's more of a kindness between people? Are you invested in the day of Christmas and how the present exchange goes? Or are you invested in the spirit of the holiday? Because the spirit of the holiday to me is awesome. Mm. Like we drive around and look at lights. I listen to the music. I love wrapping presents if I'm not behind.
I hate wrapping presents.
I love it.
I suck at it.
I love finding things for people that are meaningful. I love Christmas cards. I love if I'm not behind. But there have been years that I'm behind and I've let it go. Like, it's not like, it's not Christmas unless there's Christmas cards. Sometimes there's not. I've gone a few years without them, and I'm still here.
You survived.
I survived. And so the point is that invest less in how it's supposed to look in terms of the family and how everything's supposed to be perfect and peaceful, and invest more in the bigger picture of what the holidays are, because it's like an opportunity for the country to come back together, even with all of our challenges, and be like, this is a season of kindness and love. And I'm not saying everybody's into it. I'm saying it's an opportunity. And everybody's kind of on the same page. We're getting the same messages. So let's take advantage of it in the best way. Let's see it. Let's notice it. Let's rise to it. You know, watch the movies. Watch, what's the one that I'm thinking of with our guy? Well, we always watch Miracle on 34th Street, which is my aunt. Was she still here? Peggy, are you still there? She is.
Sure.
That's her favorite movie. We always watch that with her. And then the one with the guy, the angel, Clarence. What am I thinking of?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. And I'm not saying the holiday is about movies. What I'm saying, the energy of these movies, about remembering what is most important, that's what the holidays are about to me. And I'm lucky enough that I get to spend time with the people I love. And, you know, and we, even if it's a shorter amount of time than it used to be, we still get to do it.
Sweetie, the biggest question is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not?
It is, but it's not giving me the vibe.
But it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. And you know what? You can watch that one like late at night after everybody's done
with
the vibe.
Such a good movie.
Yeah, because there's nothing wrong with Die Hard. There's a lot of things wrong with Die Hard.
There's nothing and there's a lot.
It's the paradox that we discuss. Die Hard is the paradox.
John, what's his name? McClane.
McClane. And he has a lot of glass in his foot.
Yes,
and,
he does.
But he can run, and it's confusing.
All right, we're going to Millie.
Okay.
We're going to Millie, what do you got?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I have sent New Year's cards and Valentine's Day cards.
There you go. Mm. That's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, in lieu of Christmas cards. So I had wanted to share just something that I plan to do with my family that I learned about just recently through the Happily Family Conference. Mm. You know, that another Team Zen member told me about. Oh my God, so amazing. And by the way, today is Daniel Siegel. So if any of you want to still sign up the last day, his talk, amazing.
Hey, Millie, can you add it to the box, just like a link, because Jason Cecilia, they started it. They're our friends. Maybe just add that to the chat box.
So you have to register for it.
I know, but there's a website that I'm sure she can.
Share. Yeah. I think you can still sign up and get it for just today. I'll send that. But through one of their speakers, I learned about his wife, Megan Schiller, who runs a website or organization called the Art Pantry. I think called Art Pantry. Let's see here. And so she's got this free holiday family canvas challenge. And I'll put this in the notes too, where she, you sign up, it's again free, and then she just sends you an email that will give you all the instructions on what to do to create a canvas, a piece of art with your entire family. And this might be more geared towards a younger kids, but I don't know. I think any kid that would be interested in doing art, you have one canvas, whether you could do either one big canvas or a small canvas per each family member. You have 8 materials. You do it over 2 weeks to 4 weeks, depending on if you want, there's a 4-step process to layer this canvas. So you first start off with putting down paint. So you pick the colors that you want your kids to do, to add in there, and you all do it together. And then the next layer you do, they call it paint pens. And then you Mod Podge on some coffee filters that you can cut out. Anyway, it looks beautiful from what, her examples will look like. And it's just a way to enjoy the creative process with your family, explore maybe new materials, and just do something together as a family. So I'm hoping to do that with my family this holiday season, and I can send that awesome. That link.
Really?
And Millie, the reason I love that is it's talk about being, you're talking about all these layers. It's multi-layered emotionally too, because not only are you going to do something different. So it's like, I've got this idea and it's art and it's us kind of sharing ourselves in these colors. And then what will that interaction be like? That's a whole nother layer. What will it be like when it's hanging up and you put it in your house and you're like, that's the memory. And there's so much more to it than just what meets the eye. And you don't even plan it. Like, I don't even want to put that in your head. Like, la, la, la. Like, just let it become what it is. And say, and I don't think this is going to happen, but say everyone's like, half-ass into it. That's okay, too. It was still a dynamic shifter. You still offered something new and you were excited about it. And even if you're the most excited, that's okay. Like, Todd, I was going to talk about this today with you anyway, but Todd at nighttime, sometimes the way he wants to connect with the girls is he wants to play games with them. And he gets really excited, right? And he's like, come on, we're going to play Skip-Bo and we're going to do this. Well, one of my daughters, who's a lot more like me, I always say when Todd's interacting with her, just pretend it's me. she's not that into it. Games to her at night are, she loves being with us. But she's more like me, like shoulder to shoulder. I want to read a book with you guys around, or I want to be down here, but I don't really want to do that. And Todd's more into it. And I said to him, just let her just sit and watch you guys and not be in the competitive mood. I don't know if that worked. Did you like it?
No, because she said she's going to be with us, and then she made herself dinner, and she didn't hang out with us as much as I was hoping.
I know, but understanding the forcing her to play a game is not the
solution.
There
was no forcing, sweetie.
No. You didn't. What I'm saying is that if you would have done that.
That would have been bad.
That wouldn't have been good either.
Yeah.
And that we sometimes have to let go of everybody else should be excited because I am. That's the same thing as I'm going to come in and do Thanksgiving differently, therefore everybody else should. We're investing more in their reaction than in bringing our excitement.
Jennifer says Skip-Bo is her favorite game because it's fun.
Then come to our house because Todd wants to play.
I love Skip-Bo. It's like It's like Uno, except better. And
right.
It's not intense, and you don't have to think too hard. And it's not a strategy game, which I love strategy games, by the way. So anyways.
Well, and just to, you know, finish with Millie, you bring that in there with all that excitement you have and all that creativity, and then just enjoy it. And if kids walk away or aren't as interested, or if it goes the other way where everybody's like, oh my gosh, we have to do this every week and we have to do this, like, just, it's all good. There's nothing bad that will come from that. That's all good. So
next question. My family moved from Virginia to upstate New York in June. She has a family of four, a husband and two girls, almost 5 years, 5 year old and a year and a half old. So 18 months. So we have had about 5 months of adjusting to new everything, new school, new teacher, new community, new schedules, new neighbors, new house. My almost five-year-old has been showing a great deal of anxiety with the new house. She will not stay in a room by herself. She won't stay in the playroom upstairs by herself. She won't go into some of the rooms in the house by herself. I have to be in her room when she wakes up, etc. I've been very patient and supportive of her needs and have not made a big deal out of this, thinking and hoping that this was just a phase in her getting used to the new house. We went and bought nightlights that she picked out. I have asked her multiple times, what could I do to help her feel safe in this house? But I haven't really received any actionable answers. Have you or any other Teen Zen friends had an experience like this? And what are some of the tips that come to you to help us get through this phase? She feels bad because her kids used to have... Okay, that's my comment. So I have one story, maybe two. The first is our oldest daughter, when she was, whatever, a year or 2 years or somewhere in between, she used to be scared of the ceiling fan, you know. And I'm, you know, my grown-up brain is like, that's dumb. Why? There's nothing scary about a ceiling fan. But to make our daughter feel safe and comfortable and everything else, we ended up putting a fitted bed sheet over the ceiling fan every night. Mm-hmm. And it helped. So sometimes the quickest solution is just to, you know, fix the problem.
Exactly. And that, in, you know, she kind of says in her question, I was thinking this was just a phase and, you know, I'm being very supportive of her. Both things are still true. It is still a phase and still keep being supportive of her. I think sometimes we think, okay, now I'm getting tired of this, therefore you should be done. But see, they're not. You know, like, I shouldn't have to tell you to put your shoes away, but they didn't put them away. So we're not done.
I have another example.
And sure, go ahead.
Cookie Monster.
Yes.
When our daughter was three, I don't know, how old was she?
I don't know. I'm having a hard time because I feel like you're talking at me.
I don't. Is that better?
Yes. Like, you talk up and then I'll be back. Okay, there we go.
I was Cookie Monster for my daughter's birthday when she was 3 years old, maybe four. And it was this huge blue monster. Technically, it was called the Furry Blue Monster.
Furry Blue Monster.
Because a Halloween store didn't pay for the licensing from Sesame Street, so they had to call it the Furry Blue Monster. So I was fully Furry Blue Monster, and I freaked her out because she couldn't see me at all. It was just a big blue costume.
And he came running down and threw cookies in his mouth, and he was kind of, to her, scary. Funny
scary.
To us. Peg, are you still on here? Is she still
she
there?
She might be.
Yeah, well, Peggy was there.
So it was a debacle. It didn't go very
well.
She
cried.
She cried. She was so scared. Even after I took the mask off and everything.
It's horrible.
So she honestly brought up the Cookie Monster incident for 365 days.
Full year.
A whole year. And, you know, in my brain, I'm like, you know, let's get over the Cookie Monster thing. There's scarier things out there, blah, blah, blah. And then one day, Sweetie, because she's smart, said, like a year later, I am so sorry that we did the Cookie Monster thing.
You weren't ready for that, and we were wrong. We kind of did it more for us because we thought it was funny, and we didn't take you into consideration, and we didn't realize it would be so scary. And I am so sorry that Furry Blue Monster came to our house for your birthday.
And guess when she stopped, you know, accusing us of being scary parents?
She goes, thank you.
That was it. She never brought it up again. I couldn't believe it.
She just kept saying, why did he come?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? You know, just kind of like we do to kids whenever they do something. Why would you do that? And again, this is a different situation. It's not that an apology is necessary if your kid's afraid to be in a room. I think the point is that she wasn't done until she was done.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes we, because like I already said, we're tired of it. We're like, and her next thing was, I keep asking her, what can I do? And she doesn't know. And she's being honest. She doesn't know because she's afraid and she's having her first experiences with fear. Then she's having her first experiences with feeling alone or afraid or uncomfortable. And you know, you never know what's going on with kids. Like, let me take a quick detour here and, you know, breed into it what you want. I've had two of my really good friends tell me that their children, Jamie and Andrea, both at certain points in time thought they had seen people in their house. My friend Andrea's daughter saw someone. When she'd go in the bathroom, she'd say, that lady's in here again. And Andrea's like, where? And she's like, she's just in here, you know, whatever. And it freaked Andrea out, and she kind of was like, no, there's nobody here, stop it. Now, let me tell you, her daughter was not afraid. She was just like, oh, there's, you know, somebody here. And then my friend Jamie, the exact same thing happened with her daughter, and she did a whole thing like, this is not real. And I don't think, because we're adults and because we've kind of become so realists and we only believe things we see with our eyes and hear with our ears and we've kind of let go of a lot of our other senses, sometimes when our children are saying something's making me uncomfortable or afraid or I'm seeing something or something's not right, because we can't see it, we're like, well, then it's not true. And I think sometimes instead of telling them why they shouldn't be afraid or how we should fix it, we just become curious about it. And we ask questions and we say, tell me, it's very different to say, how do I stop you from being afraid than saying, how can I support you? Because how can I support you is no, you're not saying stop it. You're saying in this moment, it's okay to be afraid. And how do I support you? And I'm not saying her daughter's seen dead people, nor do I fully understand what my other friends' daughters are seeing. I'm only throwing that out there because I think kids are more attuned to different energies. And instead of telling them what they're experiencing, ask them what they're experiencing.
Well, and I will, to protect the innocent, we have three daughters, and 10, 12, and 14, and one of them is still scared to go into the basement by herself.
Oh, yeah.
So she'll want to go down and get whatever,
top
or something like that. And she'll be like, Dad, will you go downstairs with me? Now, for me, my ego is like, listen, you're X amount of years old. You need to figure out how to go downstairs without me accompanying you. But that's my ego. And I tell my ego, hey, man, I hear you, but I'm not going to respond from ego. Instead, I'll say, let me finish what I'm doing, and then I'll walk downstairs
with
you. There's a practical part of that. I'm like, that's like, she's got to figure this out, and I'm enabling her, but I'm not. I'm just, it's an opportunity for me to connect with my daughter. She feels less than safe by going into the basement. So what am I going to do? Now this girl in this question is 5 years old. It's a new house.
Very normal.
That's not easy.
No, it's not. It's very normal. And she's she may not be afraid of ghosts and spiders. She just may be, everything feels new and unsure. It's not always scary like monsters. It's this room feels empty.
Mm-hmm.
This house isn't my house yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it will become her house. But it becomes her house through warmth, through, oh, now I've shared this room with my mom, and now I've shared this room with somebody else, and I've had a memory in this room. And then it becomes your house. You know, for all of you listening, you probably had experiences where you move into a new house, and it doesn't feel like your house. You're kind of like, I don't feel like I'm at home. And then all of a sudden, one day, magically, you're like, oh, this is my home, you know? And you don't, it's not because of one thing. It's because of this rhythm that you found. Todd and I were talking yesterday about how we moved a ton when we first got together. We lived in Chicago. We moved in Chicago. Then we moved to Elmhurst to a house. Then we moved to this house. And it took a while to feel like we were home. And now I don't even think a thing of it. This is home.
Yeah. And it's only been 5 months.
Yeah.
5 months of adjusting.
So I would worry less about it being a pathology, like something that needs to be solved or something that's a problem, and think about it more as an opportunity for you to help her adjust and to make this home her home.
But it also, she's chasing after an 18-month-old too.
And she's busy. Yeah.
She's really busy. So it's like one of those things, like, do you have to always stop what you're doing to accommodate this 5-year-old? No, there's times when you cannot help her.
I can't go in that room with you, but you're not judging her for feeling the way she does.
Right.
You're saying, right now I'm feeding your sister or your brother, and I can go with you in 15 minutes or in 30 minutes, or I can't do it right now, but you're not shaming her for feeling the way she does. Those are two very different things.
Right. I have another question, but
any questions up here?
No. So if anybody, let's see, somebody just said
scary movie commercials.
Yes. Jennifer just said in the chat, because not some people are listening on their phone and they're not looking at their chat. Jennifer says, scary movie commercials used to terrify my older son. They seem to always be shown during major sports events. So we would DVR the game and give it a little head start so that we would fast forward through commercials. Funny part, now he loves scary movies.
Of course. I used to love scary movies when I was little, and now I don't like them. So sometimes it goes the other way.
Well, there's a part of you that does like them, sweetie.
I do.
You're just too much of a fraidy cat because you get really scared.
No,
these words I will not. Right, yeah.
I could watch it. What I've become is more self-loving. Mm-hmm. That I've realized that, of course, I could watch it, and I could be scared, and I would think it's fun, but I don't want to hurt my innards like I used to. I used to take so long to recover that I won't do that anymore.
Aim McGuire, I don't know if that's Amy, sorry if I don't know your name, Aim McGuire, but she says, hello, my 6-year-old daughter is super sensitive to pain and more so the idea of pain. If she has a tiny spot on her finger, she needs a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
There was once a tick in her head, and we tried for 45 minutes to convince her that we can get it off without hurting her. We finally had to hold her down to remove it. I've tried to normalize these things, but she has nothing of it. Any thoughts?
Great question.
Yes.
Our daughter had a tick on her head once too, and I had to pretend that it wasn't freaking me out.
Was it freaking you out?
Yes, because it was like...
What happened? You walked into her bedroom.
Can I do my tick impression?
Sure.
So she comes out one morning, and she's like, something itches right here. So I'm like, okay, and I did this, and it looked like there was a little corn kernel just in her hair. I was like, wow, that's kind of big. And so I touched it, and it goes... The head had already gotten into her scalp, and there was a little tick. I was like, oh, like, you know, you're trying not to scare your child. It was really kind of funny. I ended up taking her to the doctor, only not because I was super scared, but I was afraid I wouldn't get the whole head out. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I had never burned one. I just didn't know how to do it. Did you want to say something first, or did you want me to go? But go ahead. So 6 years old with the whole, like, there's something on my finger, I need a Band-Aid thing is very normal. I know I say that a lot, but and not every kid does that, but every single one of our kids have gone through those phases. And it's at different times. It's not always at 6. Sometimes it was younger, sometimes it was older. You can understand, this is where we jump into our compassion. Pain is painful. And I know that sounds dumb and redundant, but you got to get there and be like, I understand why she doesn't want pain, because do you want pain? I don't. And she's just starting, her brain is just starting to recognize that pain is part of this equation, that living a life means sometimes you get hurt and it's scary. And right now her anticipatory anxiety is causing her to think about, when will I feel pain next?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very normal experience for kids to have, and they all have it at different times, and sometimes it reappears in the teen years. And to be honest, it's reappeared for me, and not now, but in other times in adulthood where I've been so fearful of it. And so compassion is really the key is, compassion for their experience. And then the thing that I say to my kids all the time, and I say this to my college students too, you were built for this kind of struggle. You know, this is very Brene Brown too. She uses this language a lot. Your body was built to handle and manage pain. It's not something you need to fear. I understand why you fear it, and I'll support you when you are in fear, but our bodies are created with these amazing chemicals that release whenever we get hurt or whenever there's pain to help us manage it. Childbirth is one of those experiences. I had 3 very different childbirths, and my third one, and I know Todd has shared this, you know, I had my third daughter in our car, and I had no pain meds. I had none of that, but I had learned how to breathe and how to do hypnobirthing in certain ways that I'm not saying I didn't have any pain. I'm saying that I had an experience of a significant lessened pain because I allowed my body to do what it naturally does. It's not for everybody, and I'm not saying anybody has to do that. My other two, I had an epidural, and that was fine too. My point is it was a lesson for me in you know, have you guys ever cut your finger so deep and you can't even feel it? And it takes like 24 hours until it really starts to hurt, or maybe 2 hours. It's because your body and your brain protect you. And it protects you from feeling it initially. So then you can handle it first. And then eventually everything will calm down. All those chemicals will decrease. And then you'll start feeling the nerve endings and the pain. These are things our kids don't know about their bodies. They don't know how amazing their bodies are. When my girls are sick and they have a fever, I'm like, your body's doing exactly what it needs to do. It, trust it. It's, if it gets to be above a certain degree, of course I'll get doctor intervention. I'm not saying don't use Western medicine. What I'm saying is that a fever's good. A fever burns out illness.
It's cooking it.
It's cooking it. Do you guys see Stranger Things?
Some of them.
Probably. Because there was some cooking going on in there too, in that show.
I'm going to, first of all, it's not Amy, it's Angie.
Angie.
And I just unmuted her. Angie, first of all, welcome. And where are you from?
Thank you. I'm from near Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, sweet. Midwesterner.
Yeah.
So did any of that help? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because I've already talked to her about like how much it hurt when she was born, because she always asks about her day she was born. And I think she understands it, that those things happen. The issue I'm having is that she gets so worked up that she cannot receive help. So she fell down a couple weeks ago and hit the back of her head. She has long hair. And I noticed that there was blood there, so I needed to check it out. And as soon as she realized that I was looking at something, she kind of went a little berserko and wouldn't even let me like pull her hair apart to look at it. Like I couldn't even inspect it enough to see if she needed to go have stitches or whatever. She just gets so freaked out. And there's even times where she'll like just be crying because of something like that, that has to do with pain. But then as soon as she gets distracted, she's like, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. And she just starts talking like she's not crying because she's in pain, but she gets herself so worked up that it's really difficult to even help her. Like, and I'm afraid something actually really serious could happen and she won't let us help her. So I would love to be in this position where I can start to help her with it, so that when it does become an issue, she's more prepared to handle it, I guess.
So she's actually giving you all, so great question. And she's giving you all the information you need, even though it's not easy for you. In no way am I saying like, oh, just do this, because it's difficult. The thing that kept coming into my head when you said that is first this, then that. What that means is when she falls or hurts herself, and there possibly could be blood or something that's significant, the first thing to attend to is just emotions. Don't look at her. And you may look at her head. See, I do the same thing. Like I was kind of being you and walking through that in my head. And of course I would look first, and then my girls would freak out, and then I'd stop looking. Just her first, just her, and say, you know, I'll breathe, not breathe, 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 where you're making her be a problem, but say, I'll breathe with you. Yes. Yes. That was scary. Yes. And cater to what just happened and be with her in her experience. Because like you said, she may not be in significant pain, but she's in physical pain, but she's in emotional pain from the fear of what could have happened or what possibly just did happen. So attend to her emotion first. And I just envision you like holding her and kind of saying, you know, I'm here. We can take care of this. We're going to take care of this. And then once there's some calming, and it may take, you know, here's the thing is it may take 5 minutes, which when I say 5 minutes, people think that's not a lot. It feels like a lot when you're sitting with a kid whose head is possibly bleeding. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh no, I need to get to that head. I need to look at it. That's really our anxiety. Mm-hmm. So here she's bringing all this anxiety and the fear of what could be wrong with me. And we're bringing our anxiety of, I have to do my parenting thing and see what's happening here. So because we're the adult and we have the rational thinking and we can calm down, we go to them and we help them calm down and get to a place where then you can say, good job calming down. How do you feel? Okay, now I'm just going to kind of take a look, you know, after her emotions are fairly calm. She might not be completely calm. And then you can say, now I'm going to take a look. And most of the time there might be blood, but you could say, obviously if it's significant and you need to go to the doctor, you go. This is what we need to do. There are times that we just have to do what we have to do. But if it's not that big of a deal, maybe don't even clean it up then. Mm-hmm. Maybe clean it up later. Maybe say, you know, at bed tonight, you know, like you did have a little blood back there, so maybe let's take a shower or a bath. What I'm trying to say is it's not about do exactly what I'm saying right now. It's about be where she is in her emotional experience and worry less about what if this means this later. Because the more you're with her in her emotional experience now, the more she learns how to acknowledge and deal with her emotional experience, and what you're concerned about later won't happen. She also, her brain is going to develop where she won't have such a chaotic experience with pain. As we all know, as we get older, you know, when I would take my girls for vaccines, it was like the end of the world. Now I take my 14-year-old and she's like, you know, she doesn't have our children. It's not that they may not have fears, but they have better maturity skills to deal with what's happening. And that's not something we need to create for them. That's going to happen because their prefrontal cortex will develop.
Sweetie, you said the same thing that Liz said. Liz said, would she let you do something different other than inspect the wound? Could you hug her first?
Me and Liz.
Yeah, you guys
are. We're thinking on the same way.
So, and Angie, you're going to get so many other opportunities to practice this.
Yeah, that's
probably
the unfortunate
later this
part.
Week. So, is there, I just unmuted you. Is there anything else you wanted to add, or did that help?
Nope. I think that's really what I've been doing so far. So I think it's just, you know, a matter of her maturing into it, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Angie, that's the thing is I think a lot of when our children, I want to meet you where you are right now, because I'm still very uncomfortable with any of my children's pain. Like me sitting here saying to you, well, do this and just hug her and it's no big deal. In no way. I just this morning had an issue with one of my girls where I had to really figure out how I was going to calm down about something so I could attend to it. So the, like Todd said, the fortunate part is we get lots of practice. The unfortunate part is we get lots of practice. Mm-hmm. Like I really have to attend to myself before I attend to them. And that doesn't go away. I get better at it. But like you said, you're already doing the right things. It's just, I think part of us were like, I'm doing the right things, but I'm still uncomfortable. And I will acknowledge you by saying you may always be uncomfortable. That I don't know if we ever get comfortable with it. I think we just learn to manage it better and we trust ourselves more and we trust them. That's what changes.
Here's another question. My 6-year-old daughter has grown up playing with our next door neighbor, a 6-year-old boy. They have been friends since they were toddlers and there are a lot of positives that come from this friendship. However, as they get older, I find myself getting more and more annoyed by the behaviors of this boy. Mainly, he is super competitive. He's always emphasizing who's winning, who's fastest, and who's the best. I also feel like her contributions, especially in the games they play that are sports-based, are minimized based on her gender. My daughter does not seem to be bothered by this in the least. So for that reason, I think I should follow her lead and let it go. But then I find myself thinking, do I want her around this? Is this the start of unhealthy masculinity? Do I need to address this with her so that she knows there is a different way for males to behave? Am I overreacting? Am I projecting my expectations about males onto an innocent situation? I can go on and on. I greatly appreciate your feedback as I think through these things in an attempt to find some clarity. That's a wonderful question. And my response is, first of all, your daughter is going to get plenty of opportunities to experience unhealthy masculinity. Sadly, that's just kind of the way it is.
Patriarchy.
This 6-year-old boy is, I don't want to say he's hardwired. He could be conditioned by his parents that the only way, you know, I was with my buddies in Arizona 3 days ago. We were there for 2 nights and we didn't have this bonding experience of everybody sitting down and sharing everything about their lives. We played 12 different competitive games in a 2-day period. It's something that I love competing. I'm not embarrassed by my love for competition. So my first thing is maybe this kid is kind of hardwired towards being competitive. You're not going to change him. Your daughter's 6 years old, so she's still pretty young. And if there's a difference between being competitive and being unkind. And if this boy is just being competitive, I say there's no interference necessary. If he's at all being unkind, that's when you may need to insert yourself either with a discussion with your daughter, just saying, I wonder why he's like that, like opening it up, peeling back the onion to kind of help her understand dealing with challenging situations. This is probably one of her first opportunities to deal with a boy who's being very quote unquote boy-like. So, but the fact that it's such a tender young age, I would say if it's not bothering her, even if it bothers you, I wouldn't do anything about it yet, but also monitor the situation as you go along.
Or it's like what the definition of doing something about it is, because you don't need to do anything about it. Like say you guys can't play together anymore, unless of course, like Todd said, there's unkindness or bullying, but there's not a lot that I don't bring up with my girls in some capacity, not in a lecture, but you know, we used to, two of the boys that, there used to be two boys who lived on our block, both are gone. But they kind of, my girls grew up, playing with them, and there was some difference in how my girls played and how the boys played. And I really liked that my girls had boys that they were playing with, because I liked the idea of them having experiences with, you know, different genders. Like how are you going to manage this game when you have different perspectives? So I really liked that. But sometimes there was things I'd see or hear that I didn't think was necessarily healthy. So, or when I say necessarily healthy, I noticed my girls had an emotional reaction to it. And so after the boys would leave, I would say, how about, you know, so-and-so saying that he needed to win every game. How about that? And so my girls would be like, yeah, like what's that all about? And I'm like, you know, that's the way he feels right now. And that's, you know, I create a conversation about it rather than a lecture about it. I think sometimes we think we either address it as we need to
as
teach
the authority,
something,
right,
or we don't touch it. And there's this middle ground of just being human.
Curiosity.
Like, what do you think he was thinking when he couldn't handle losing that game? Like, woo. Or I'll say, wow, you really handled that well. I kind of, because this 6-year-old is probably not being hurt by it, but there's nothing wrong with starting a conversation around it. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying, man, he needs to win a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not like ripping him apart or saying he's a bad kid. You're just saying.
And it's not male, female either. There's girls out there that don't want to lose anything. And there's boys out there that could care less about winning. So it's important to differentiate the difference between male, female, and masculine, feminine.
Or just to say, like, and you know, that's what we use as adults, or that's how Todd and I talk about it. But, you know, just like Todd said, you're going to run into girls who are super competitive, and there are boys who are super competitive, and it's not about how to change them or about how to be more like them. It's about how will you deal with it? How will you handle it yourself? And part of it is just acknowledging it's happening. And part of it is acknowledging why someone is competitive. Because when you really break it down, this is why I like psychology and why I like being a therapist. Everything makes sense. There's, you know, sometimes we're like, I can't believe that person would do that. Well, go two layers below and it will make sense to you. Everything makes sense. Competing and winning makes people feel good about who they are. It gives them a sense of identity. It gives them a sense of that they belong, of that they're valued.
Kind of like how I beat my daughters at Skippo last night.
And then Todd like went like this and ran around the table.
That's right. I am not a, I tell them one thing, but I do something else. I say win with grace, lose with dignity. But when I win Skippo, I'm braggadocious about it.
And then he'll say we have to shake hands too.
Because I'm so good at it.
I know. It's really
actually,
quite a
thing. I'm not that good at it. But I did win last night. That's the good news.
I don't play. I read my book. And so that's
would you like to play?
No.
Are you sure?
I want to be in the room. I just don't want to be with you guys.
And it's kind of fun.
That's the freedom I want you to give our other daughters, to let her be around
but
not
so
have
fun.
To play.
It's so fun.
But we can't let them play. Don't make them play. Don't make me sing.
Don't make me sing.
I have no choice. So that's, you know, that's kind of what I'd say. I can't even remember what the question was. What was I talking about?
6-year-old.
The competition thing.
Yeah.
It's not just about this boy or about this situation. I think it's with everything.
Well, and this is a little bit like lawnmower. Not this woman, but, you know, there's this idea of lawnmower parents where they mow everything down so that their kid doesn't have any struggles or challenges. And let's get off this question. But as parent, there's a part of me that wants to be a lawnmower parent and make sure that my kids don't struggle at all. But, you know, hopefully my wisdom and my intuition kick in So I don't do that. It's the balance beam. You don't want to, you know, let your kid fall off the balance beam and crack their head open. But at the same time, you don't want to hold them so they don't figure out how to balance themselves.
Correct. It's a great analogy. You can kind of see it that way. And, you know, that's our job, you know, is finding that back and forth. And there are no absolutes. You know, we talked about on the show that's coming out tomorrow that, you know, there a lot of people will email us and say, well, you said this, but the week before you said this. And I'm like, yep.
We did a presentation at the library last week. And I think we should keep using this because Kathy said, if you leave here confused, we've done our job.
And confusion doesn't mean that it's bad. Confusion means we've opened your mind to something. So instead of being like, children need to nap at 1, kids must never disrespect me, my kid has a problem that's tunnel vision. And then if you listen to the show or you're on this team or you come to one of our presentations and that starts to fall away and you're confused, that's good. Because you need to be open that sometimes you go in, sometimes you come out, sometimes you bring something up, sometimes you don't. And you have to be attuned to your own internal, you know, guide. And to be in touch with yourself, you have to sleep and you have to take care of yourself and you have to do all this self-care and this self-monitoring that we talk about. And you also have to realize you're not going to do it perfectly. And you have to realize that some days you just suck at it. Mm-hmm. And you just say, you know what, today I suck at this. And this is not the right day to bring this up. Not in a good mood. I'm going to go to bed early and I'm going to start again. And you need to forgive yourself instead of saying I'm failing.
Yeah. Know that you're going to suck at it. But what you can do is try to not go into the shame spiral.
Yeah.
And I think human beings like to go in that shame spiral. And nothing good comes from it.
You can suck at something, but not suck. That's the thing. That's the guilt shame thing. Guilt is I did something that wasn't right. Shame is I'm not right. And it's the same with saying I suck at this today, but it doesn't mean I suck as a person or as a mom. It just means this is not working today. It can work tomorrow when I have some rest and when I get through all these things I need to do. And so that's the back and forth. And maybe the word confusion makes you uncomfortable and you're like, I don't want to be confused. So how about open? Open.
I like confused.
I know. Toddy likes confused. All right. It's 1:00.
Did you buy Cheez-Its for the chili?
We have Cheez-Its left over.
Here's my secret ingredients to good chili. Don't use oyster crackers. That's like boring.
I like
Cheez-Its is the trick.
And then sharp cheddar cheese.
Yes.
And you've got to grate it on the grater.
And do we ever do avocado in chili?
Or we have, but is that weird? It makes it too, I don't
like
it.
Is that weird?
Anymore. No.
No, I think it's good. So I'm excited.
That's for dinner,
chili.
Though, not for lunch.
I'm hungry.
I'm going to make that
I'm
next.
Hungry.
And I want to go in the kitchen and be all by myself.
Okay, we'll talk.
I don't want to talk. I want to just make chili and I want anyone to talk to me. And I want to listen to my Good Life Project podcast and just...
What about Zen Parenting Radio?
No, not Zen Parenting
Radio. That's a good one.
So if you guys have other questions, email us. We have the free... So next Monday is our Civility and Compassion talk, and it's for whoever wants to come, but it's free for all of you. Yeah. So show up. It's kind of like... It's just like a Zen talk, same technology. You don't have to do anything different. We'll be a little more structured because it's a class that we're offering, but hopefully it'll get you set mentally for the holidays.
Sweetie, the slackers have to pay.
The slackers have to pay, but you guys aren't slackers.
But the Team Zen peeps don't have to pay because we love the Team Zen peeps.
We sure do. We love everybody, but especially you guys.
But especially them, not so much the slackers.
So thanks for your questions. There were a lot of people on today, so I'm sorry if we didn't get to things or we didn't give you a chance to help each other as much. But I think it was all right.
I think it was good. And just don't be shy. If you want to throw something out there, either in an email or on our Facebook or while we're talking, we just want you to feel comfortable.
That's right. And that's the thing is between now and the next talk, you can go to the Facebook page and write a question and lots of people can give input. Yes. Todd and I will give input.
The community is starting to build. Mm-hmm. So it's just better. Like a few people had Facebook questions last week and you chime into almost every question. I chime into maybe half, but there was just a lot of activity on the Facebook
page. And some people are answering a hell of a lot better than I can.
Exactly.
So I appreciate that.
Please know that there are no experts, or we're all experts, one or the other.
And everything is going to be okay.
But it looks backwards.
I know. But my friend Jessica gave this to me after the election, and I use this all the time.
Oh, actually, on my screen, it looks okay.
Everything is going to be okay. And I drink this every day.
In the words of Bob Marley, don't worry about a thing, because every little thing, don't shut me up.
I am
going to be all right.
Ending the meeting. We
love
you guys.
Come on.